on America Can We Talk, I talk about election integrity, border security, healthcare freedom, race relations, energy and tax policy, education policy, free speech and assembly, freedom of religion, and all other issues that touch on the God-given right of every American to life, liberty, and the pursuit of their version of happiness. Stay tuned. You preach your tolerance, but lecture me. Is there no end to your own hypocrisy? Your God is power, you have no shame. Your only interest is political gain. You hide your eyes and refuse to listen. You play your game.
Coming up next, America Can We Talk with your host, Debbie Georgiatos.
And hello and welcome to America Can We Talk. I'm Debbie Georgiatos. I want to say a few quick thank yous at the start of the show. Thank you for Real News PR, my wonderful producer, Emilio Diaz, who changes direction every time I ask him. Just very, very helpful. Appreciate him and Real News PR. I also want to thank Brighteon.tv. Brighteon.tv carries this show online, and there are just a wonderful group of talk show hosts there. Check out Brighteon.tv. They have products you can buy there. They have just serious patriots who get just have a chance to have their voices heard. And also where you can watch my show always is there is a website, AmericaCanWeTalk.org. You can also watch the show there and any other social media outlet that exists in America, except, of course, YouTube. We won't go there again. No longer on YouTube, but, you know, that's the way it goes. Also want to thank, our theme music is by Krista Branch. She has that song. She sings that song, I Am America. The words are stellar. And the words were written by her husband, lyrics and music written by her husband. Krista Branch is the artist. And if you ever take the time to read the words, she is singing the message to this show, which is America is owned by the and controlled, and the future of America is controlled by people who get involved, who speak up for America, who work hard to elect responsible people or run for office yourself and stand up for the ideas of America. So that's what this show is all about. My first five today, what I'm just going to talk about today, injustice in America, January 6th, Trump and the Stein verdicts. We're going to interview a friend of ours, Vince Gallo. He's a candidate for Texas State House, District 63. Interview next with Mike Mason. He's with Texans for Responsible Judges. Really, really, really important message. We'll get to that in a moment. If I get time to get to my last two topics, I just called one, Knives Out on Biden, the 25th Amendment time has arrived, and Ukraine funding bill kneecaps Trump's next term. I'm fully aware I won't get to probably all those, but if I can, I will. So my quick first five to injustice in America. You likely know, if you've watched my show very often, that at one point I had a wonderful, the Thursday shows involve a full-hour interview. We have in-studio audience, a fabulous, it's just a great time every week on my Thursday shows. We had guests in last summer named Jalise and Mark Middleton. These are Texas farmers. These are salt of the earth people, and they are just God-fearing, Bible-believing, straight arrow, never had a speeding ticket, anything with the law, but they went up to Washington on January 6th because they truly believe the election had been stolen. They were standing in public area on public lawn and praying for America. They were with one other person, a stranger who joined their circle of prayer, and they were just standing there praying for America and for justice and truth to prevail. They were assaulted. The initiation of that assault was by a Washington, D.C. police officer, Metro police officer, who hit one of them with a billy club. And in a 20-second interaction, attempting to get away from him, hitting them with a billy club, pushed him away. That was the whole thing. They thought they were done. And what happened after that, months later, was literally the FBI, 20 FBI officers, long guns, battering rams, showed up at their farm. They had no idea what in the world was going on. And they were arrested. And they were arrested for their conduct in being in Washington on January 6, 2021. And long story short, I've been reporting to you that they were in trial and in Washington, and they've been texting me to keep me updated. So the short and unfortunate answer is today, the jury came back on their trial guilty on all charges. They both face about 20 years in prison for standing on public property praying for America. That's where we are in America. And I raise that, I call this first five, I call this segment about injustice in America. Their case is one among literally thousands of profoundly unjust cases. We featured many of them in the show. And if you're thinking, listening to this, well, I didn't go on January 6th, or, you know, I would never have done that, or they should have known better, understand every time we lose a piece of the rule of law, anytime we agree that a jury can be so biased, a judicial system can be so biased, judges can ignore the law, everybody is hurt. The future of the rule of law in America is hurt. That was one case I wanted to mention to you. The other two very quick ones, of course, everyone's heard by now that Donald Trump, in the litigation by a woman who claims some sort of assault, it was so, if you listened and followed that trial very often or followed the facts, there was no hint of reality to it. It had very much the earmarks of something that had been concocted. The state of New York had to move the stat, change the statute of limitations to allow this to run, this case to happen, and they had to have a billionaire from Silicon Valley fund the case. But anyway, this Get Donald Trump becomes kind of like, you know, the substitute rule of law the American left is imposing. So he had an $83 million verdict against him in this just absurd case. It should offend everyone, because if they can pick on someone, and part of what I want to get at is just kind of this mob mentality that has taken over America and really taken over the American left. This notion, if you can get Trump, great. Doesn't matter whether it's fair. Doesn't matter if it's just. Doesn't matter if it's true. Get Trump is actually the law, which they are trying to enforce. So that case has happened. I'm sure there'll be an appeal. And the last I want to mention to you, because it carries over into lots of other topics, we've mentioned Mark Stein on the show numerous times. He's actually a native Australian, but he lived in Canada a long time. He's a wonderful writer, author. He's also a talk show host, used to substitute for Rush Limbaugh sometimes. So Mark Stein was sued by a guy, a climate alarmism activist named Michael Mann. And so Michael Mann didn't like that Mark Stein kept on pointing out how fallacious, that means false in plain English, untrue, the allegations, the claims, and all the prognostications that Michael Mann was making. And what Mark Stein did was just point out, you know, here's what they are. So Michael Mann finally got fed up, sued Mark Stein for defamation, and over a statement that Mark Stein had made. I don't want to get into the details of the case, except to say the defamation case, and you know, you have to care what these cases really are. The defamation case was essentially Michael Mann saying Mark Stein, you know, harmed my reputation. He compared me to a really bad person, which he did compare him to a really bad person. So the case goes to trial. It wasn't about climate change. It wasn't about who's right about climate change. It was over whether or not this statement that Mark Stein made comparing Michael Mann to a bad guy, whether, you know, it was a false statement, and whether to be defamatory or to have damages, you have to have a harm come to the person who's complaining. And I'm leading all up to say, here's what happened. Mark Stein, in court, defending himself in court, and has the plaintiff, Michael Mann, going after him. And during the course of the toward the end of the trial, when they're making closing arguments, that just means, you know, the evidence has been presented, you're at the point, you're making your argument to the jury. The lawyer for Michael Mann essentially said, you know, okay, it's pretty clear there are no damages to Michael Mann. And literally, nothing bad happened to him. That's one of the primary elements to win damages from a jury. You have to have harm. But he didn't lose his job. He didn't lose his reputation. Nothing bad happened to him, so he couldn't prove damages. But he still got to the jury. In the course of the argument to the jury, the lawyer for Michael Mann argued to the jury. And I mean, it's almost absurd to say, except it really matters what they did. In what this lawyer for Michael Mann is doing, he's essentially, they say, playing the Trump card. He was saying to the jury, you have to find this guy, Mark Stein, liable for defamation because, number one, you know, he's an he affiliates with Trump people. He's an election denier, and he's a climate change denier. And the judge, literally, other lawyers objecting. The judge is interrupting this guy saying, you know, you can't argue that to the jury. You can't say that. We're here to talk about defamation. Yes or no? Did it happen? But he continued to do that. And his basic argument to this jury was, you should find a whole lot of damages against Mark Stein, because people like him, challenge climate change. And you can't let people speak, and you can't allow them to challenge climate change. People like him deny that they claim there was election fraud. They're election deniers. You send a message to all of America. This was his argument. You send a message to America. Everyone better shut up. You don't challenge climate change, and you don't challenge the validity of our elections. And even though the judge is telling him, you can't be arguing this, they let it go to the jury. The jury came back with a $100 million verdict against Mark Stein. I don't want to go into the details of the case, except to make this point that more broadly applies to all of America. You're watching the downfall, the destruction of America's rule of law. You are watching the outcome of decades of people being fed lies by the left, fed lies by the media. They can't even do the job of a juror. They cannot distinguish between facts relevant to this case. Did Mark Stein or not? Did he defame Michael Mann? Was he harmed by it? That should have been dispositive. The jury found there was no. They found $1 damage to give to say that yes, he was defamed to justify a $100 million punitive damages verdict. Now, of course, it'll be appealed. But I'm telling you, these cases we talk about, January 6th, how President Trump is treated, how this case happens, the end of the day, and why it matters so much is this: we're losing this crisp, one of the most profound elements of freedom in America, the rule of law, due process, a judicial system that actually treats people fairly, that forces lawyers and judges to stay within the bounds of the case presented to them. We have this January 6th conviction of these two people in Texas, the Middletons, not because they did anything wrong, but because the jury has been mesmerized, hypnotized, and clobbered with left-wing baloney, left-wing hogwash, so that they, to their minds, it doesn't matter what the facts were. They could have just skipped the trial and let it go to the jury, because they're going to do the same thing. They're going to find people guilty because they came to January 6th to stand up to the protest, to stand up for Donald Trump, to stand up for free elections, and to protest what was obviously a stolen election. This loss of the concept of rule of law eventually will hurt everyone. And so the idea in America, when you try to, when you work in your political activity, you support candidates, elected officials, when you elect people who are going to have power over you, it's important that you, number one, vet them carefully, understand what they stand for, and number two, work for the ones who actually understand what is happening. And this is really what we're describing, what I'm describing in this presentation, this first five. It is an intentional movement by leftists in this country. It is not isolated, disconnected instances. It is all the dots connect, because leftism in this country is really all about eventually taking down America as founded and allowing the radical leftists, the globalists, the Marxists take over this country. That's what we're watching, and that's why it matters to stand up on every single case. And that, my very fine friends, is today's first five. Okay, so it's always longer than five, but you know, I can't count. Anyway, so I have a guest joining me in Studio 10. Very glad you could come today. He is one of the individuals who's running for the Texas State House. And I say this at the start of every one of these interviews. Wherever you are listening around America, a lot of people think in Texas, hey man, you know, you got Republican governors everywhere. You know, we have Republicans in power. What are you even worried about? Everything's fine. Actually, in Texas, we do have some very, very serious challenges. Especially challenges going forward in the future, as even though, yes, it is factually true, we have elected Republicans at the highest level of office, and we have a Republican majority in the House and Senate here in Texas, we have some really wrong, bad actors inside the Texas legislature, and we have people who just are willing to ignore the rule of law, which happened in particular, we'll talk about more about Ken Paxton in a moment, ignored the rule of law and did some things that what was just contrary to the values, the choices that the American vote, the Texas voters made. So one such official who is joining us, a soon-to-be official, we hope, is running for Texas State House. His name is Vince Gallo, and he's running for Texas House HD 63. And I'll try to repeat his website many times. It's Gallo, G-A-L-L-O, for Texas.com. He's running for Texas House. And so with that introduction, I'll welcome to the show my friend Vince Gallo.
Thank you, Debbie. I appreciate you having me. I appreciate you being here. And what you're doing, the intro to your show today kind of revamped where I was going to go, because I, as a former police officer, I have personally experienced a lot of the issues regarding evidence and the presentation of that evidence in court, And I have a keen sense of the responsibility of people to actually abide by the law, because as law enforcement officers, you are charged with the responsibility of enforcing the law and doing it in an even-handed way. And one of the things that I have watched over the last couple of years especially is the perversion and the weaponization of law enforcement across the country. And just remarking on what you just spoke about, people think that Texas is immune from that, but it's not immune from that. And one of the prime examples of that is what has happened with the case of Attorney General Ken Paxton. And one of the reasons why I chose to get into this race is because I see the leftist onslaught that is being brought by people from Washington, D.C., and trying to impose that leftist onslaught onto the people of Texas in many ways, including state sovereignty and just the general application of the law. And Mr. Paxton has been paramount in pushing back on that, and yet the State House, under the direction of Dade Phelan and with the cooperation of 60 Republican House members, disregarded the rule of law and launched into a political impeachment of Mr. Paxton. And you cannot have the destruction of the rule of law in your country or your state, or you will end up in a third world banana republic. And that's where we're headed. So I found it paramount that myself and other individuals that are trying to ensure that Texas remains free and sovereign and the United States remains free and sovereign, that you have to step up and stand up against this injustice. So I've decided to run for House District 63, and we're working very hard to replace the person that is there now and make sure that you have a representative in our district that is a true conservative Republican representative that is not going to be swayed by political pressure to engage in illegal or unethical behavior regarding the application of the law.
Sounds great to me. And I'll mention one thing for our listeners. We went over at the time this case was going on. We talked about it at great length on this show. But Ken Paxton, as the Attorney General of Texas, is regularly referred to, not just by his supporters, but by people around the country. He's the most conservative and he's the most assertive Attorney General in America. He's the one who, I still believe, the litigation he brought before the Supreme Court right after the 2020 election, trying to get the Supreme Court's attention on the obvious election fraud of 2020, should not have been dismissed. It was dismissed based on standing. But throughout countless issues, he does the bidding of the people, meaning he brings litigation challenging, it was first the Obama administration, the Biden administration, challenges them on what they're doing that he believes to be unlawful. One of the final things he did before the impeachment happened, he brought litigation regarding the biopharmaceutical companies, and he was basically saying, you know, you've got to justify what you've unleashed on Texas, the damage that flow from these vaccines. So he'll poke any bear. He doesn't shy away and think, I better not go there. He'll go after things that are crucial. And so on the rule of law, and I want to hit the other things that you're running on, but on the subject of rule of law, Texas has a law that says you cannot impeach an official for conduct that occurred prior to the most recent election, period. And it's not because, you know, it has a very profound basis, which is it's the rule of law in America, the idea in our Constitution, we are the sovereign. The people are the sovereign. We elected this person, whatever allegations existed, they were out there. Heaven knows all his opponents are making them. And the people decided, we like this guy because he fights for us. That was the right of the people to make that decision. So when you're in the legislature and you're going to ignore that, you're going to ignore that the people just reelected him because they like him, you know, you're kind of saying that kind of clubby, I don't know what to call it, ruling cabal mentality. It says, we know better than the people. They did reelect Paxton, but we don't think they should have, so we're just going to overrule him. That's how it struck me. Do you think that's fair to say?
I think it is fair to say. I think that I have this philosophy that nobody does anything without having a reason for what they're doing. Nobody just randomly does something. I don't care how small it is or how complex it is. But the more complex it gets, the more important to those individuals the reason is behind their behavior. And so the idea that you're going to impeach a sitting attorney general that was elected by the margin that he was elected with, somebody that is actually standing up for the state of Texas and people within the state of Texas, the idea that you're going to do that on a whim to me is just, it's just preposterous. So I believe that there was a concerted effort to get rid of him because he is rocking the boat in Washington, D.C., but I also believe that they were trying to clear the way for George P. to become Attorney General of the state of Texas. I believe that, that happened on purpose. I don't think that that it's just a coincidence that they brought that impeachment trial because they thought that he violated some rule or law or what have you. I think Texas is extremely political, and I think that a lot of people who represent themselves as conservative Republican politicians are not. They're just not. They are very moderate and may even qualify as Democrats posing as Republicans. They tried to kneecap the one person in the state of Texas that was actually working very hard to ensure election integrity and the proper protection of people from people that are engaged in things like pushing vaccines or solutions to problems that weren't properly vetted. And I think there's enough evidence out there now that those vaccines probably should have had a substantial review period before they were even unleashed on the public. And when you stand up against that, you're standing up against powerful people. They don't like it when people stand up against powerful people.
Yeah, you touched on something I make this point off on other topics. In this era, in this time in America, you can't look at just one issue and think, well, there are two sides and Democrats think this, Republicans think this. You can't just, because in many, many issues, there's a connection, which is there's a larger force at work in this country, a larger force at work. You spoke about whether this was an attempt, and I've heard other people say this, an attempt to try to remove Ken Paxton, to try to allow the resurgence of the Bush, whatever you want to call it, faction of the party, the George P. Bush, and he was the, you know, he obviously a primary challenger and didn't do well. And, you know, that was a seen as a one force against Texas. And there are even kind of larger forces. I think, you know, Ken Paxton often, he fights the same kind of fights that Donald Trump fights. You know, he says what's true and he stands up and he listens to the people and he speaks on behalf of the people, even when it's unpopular. And when the pressure that comes quite often from the left, from establishment, from uniparty, whatever you want to call these people, the pressure is immense, and most people, or many people, will just step back and say, okay, fine, tell me what I'm supposed to say that's acceptable. And in both cases, Donald Trump and Ken Paxton, they just won't do it. They just plow forward with their highest sense of what is right for America or Texas and what is true.
That is true.
Okay, so beside the Paxton impeachment, which by itself, I think for many people in Texas, it was an eye-opener, a thought, you know, maybe we need to, you know, change out some of these House members because they seem to be more beholden to whatever the sources are that were pushing this impeachment rather than beholden to the voters who chose Ken Paxton. Are there other issues driving your race for
just the border primarily? Is there's no doubt that what I see, the border is an existential threat to the United States and to the state of Texas. The border, election integrity, and the weaponization of law enforcement and the justice system are three things that if you don't get a handle on them, they're going to destroy the United States and they're going to destroy Texas. And, you know, somebody once said you can vote yourself into socialism, but you have to shoot your way out of it.
I love that saying. Yeah. You know, it's a funny thing. I often say in a lot of my speeches, I talk about the two things that will just kill us, that will end America. It is the border and election integrity. But you're actually right about adding that third one about weaponization of law enforcement, of the police. If you have, and we used to use the expression in America, the banana republic, the places that had less of a structure of rule of law, we recognize when convictions happened or someone was voted out of office and all of a sudden that that person who got voted out is now the subject of multiple criminal prosecutions. We used to recognize that and say, wow, good thing we don't behave like that here. But it's happening to us, the weaponization of law enforcement, it'll change everything.
It will, and I'm going to give you two real quick examples. I mean, I was a police officer that did a lot of investigative work as far as being in charge of the Adult and Youth Services Division of the Carrollton Police Department for a while. And when you go before a judge, you swear something on an arrest affidavit or a search warrant affidavit, and it lists the crime, it lists the elements of the crime, the location, the time, how it occurred. And down at the bottom, it says, I swear and attest under the penalty of perjury that the aforementioned facts are true.
Yeah.
And if it turns out that you lied on that, you're subject to perjury charges. And when they tried to impeach Mr. Paxton, I was waiting for somebody in the House to stand up and come up with a sworn perjury or a sworn testimony or statement, and they wouldn't do it. And I kept thinking, why won't they come with something that they're willing to swear to in public? And they kept saying, it'll happen in the House or in the Senate. You'll get the information in the Senate. It never came, and so I knew before it even went to the Senate that this was politically motivated. When January 6th happened, Officer Brian Sicknick was reportedly a victim of being bludgeoned to death with a fire extinguisher. Having been in law enforcement and understanding what people look like when they've been bludgeoned to death by blunt objects, I thought, you know, I'm going to call the coroner up there in D.C. and ask them what their ruling was, manner and cause of death. He wouldn't do it. For 6 months, people on TV were telling people that the guy was bludgeoned to death with a fire extinguisher. It turns out that that's not what happened, and it turns out that they knew that that did not happen, and yet they lied to the American public in order to push a political narrative. We cannot have media sources and institutions that we have relied on in this country to keep us safe and to equally apply the law, whether that's the courts or the media or any other institution, picking winners and losers. That is the pathway to a banana republic. And that's one of the reasons why I'm running, because I'm trying to make sure that not only our borders are enforced, our elections are enforced, our children are protected, and the rule of law prevails. I'm not willing to sit and watch this country go down the drain. There's nowhere else to run, Debbie. We don't have any place else to go. So if you're not willing to stand up and fight for this place, I don't know what you think you're going to inherit, but it's not going to be anywhere you want to be.
It's not going to be America.
No, it will not.
Yeah. So again, for our listeners, your website, because I will tell you, I've tried to say this to every candidate, I wish it were free to run for office, but it's not. So right now we're talking about Vince Gallo. He's running for HD 63 in Texas. Website is Gallo, G-A-L-L-O, gallo4texas.com. And every candidate needs to raise money, and you raise money to send out flyers, to send, you know, all the things that you have to hire campaign consultants, you have to produce materials, you have to produce things to get the public to know who you are. If you had a district full of extremely well-informed citizens, you might have to do less work. It just takes work to help people understand there's a new candidate available, especially when the incumbent has name recognition. So it's kind of people go in if they haven't heard anybody else, go, well, I heard of that guy, and check that off. And that's the none of us can do that in any campaign anymore. So we've got to be willing to look at the candidate. So you've got a website. I'm making a pitch. They should make a donation. Gallo4texas.com, make a donation. And I know you're working hard very quickly. Are you knocking doors and all that?
We are knocking doors. By the time early voting rolls around, we will have somewhere around 14,000 pieces of information that will have been hand-delivered to people. We've got a mailer going out to 17,000 people in the district. We've got social media ads running right now across a wide spectrum of social media platforms. And I've done numerous forums and events, most of which my opponent has decided not to attend for some reason or another. So, again, it's just a function of whether or not you're willing to stand up and expose yourself and be willing to state your ideals and whether or not you think that they're worth the populace supporting. And I believe that conservative ideals are worth supporting.
Absolutely. And I also meant to mention you have received many wonderful endorsements, including that of Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton.
I have been endorsed by Mr. Paxton, Attorney General Paxton, and Grassroots America out of Tyler, Texas, and Joanne Fleming, the Denton County Conservative Coalition, Evelyn Brooks from the State Board of Education, and I've got an endorsement that will be coming here within the next day or so that is a whole host of precinct chairs that cover a wide portion of Denton County. So I'm well endorsed by people who are paying attention to what's going on.
Yeah, well, you wish all those people would tell their 25 best friends.
That's correct.
What you do.
That's
right.
Correct.
Okay. Vince Gallo, thank you for taking time out of your campaign to join me today.
Thank you very much.
Great to have you here. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, my very fine friends, I want to turn very quickly to our next guest. We are speaking with Mike Mason, and he's working with a new group called Texans for Responsible Judges. And amazingly, I tell you, you might think I did this all, all of this kind of happened to come together, but the truth is, I was already going to rail about, the January 6th, which I thought was just beyond outrageous, about the Trump verdict, the Stein verdict. I mean, all of these things happening, they tell you the importance of judges, the profound importance of holding on to the rule of law. And the idea of finding the right judges is not to make sure they like your guy, they protect your guy. The idea is people who actually follow the rule of law. And I have to tell you, I went to law school a few decades ago. I'll admit this. However, in law school and actually after, I really had the impression overall that most judges, state and federal court, tried very hard to follow the rule of law. And we, you know, in learning in law school and in practicing law, okay, in California, don't tell anybody, I used to live in California. I practiced law there. Even in California, the judges tried to follow the law. I think it was the norm. But when I talk about these forces at work in America, I'm not just talking about a political party, although I think the Democrat Party is often complicit in a lot of this, it is a larger ideological force at work in America, simply over time undermining and taking down and belittling the various fundamental ideas that created America. I've talked many times on the show about how, you know, going back 100 years now, when the communists came to America, they soon realized they could not have a communist revolution in America and have it be successful because they could not convince people of the unfairness of the country. They couldn't pitch the whole, you know, Bolsheviks and proletariat argument here because it's a land of opportunity. So what communists, Marxists, leftists, socialists have done for decades is work to divide America, to pit us against each other, to work us into a lather over things that aren't even real and true. And one thing in particular, which we're going to be talking about right now, is how so many people have been, let me back up and say this. This trusting in the judiciary and thinking, well, probably if they said it must be right. Even this verdict that I mentioned earlier about January 6th, a lot of people sit back and say, well, I guess those people probably did something wrong. Why else would a jury find them guilty? And there are a lot of reasons. And among the reasons I want to try to focus on is there are larger forces at work in this country trying to really divide this country and try to diminish our trust in America's unique and extraordinary greatness, which is the entire purpose of doing my show, to speak up for America's unique and extraordinary greatness. So our next guest joining us is named Mike Mason, and he's heading up a group called Texans for Responsible Judges, which, as he said earlier, when I met him, it's kind of a mouthful of a name, pretty much.
Yeah, it's really too much.
But the idea of having judges who will actually follow the rule of law matters. And to look more closely at what drives them, what kind of decisions they've made in the past, if they have a record, and try to inspire enough Americans to recognize when you go vote, you're going to vote for your state rep, you're going to vote for a U.S. congressman, if your senator's up, you're going to vote for that person. But going down the ballot in Texas and other states where we elect our judiciary, you got to pay attention to the judges. So welcome to the show, Mike Mason.
Well, thank you, Debbie. I want to start out by saying, first of all, you inspire me.
Thank you.
Listening to you talk and really get going, it just it's inspiring, and thank you for what you do.
Well, you're very kind. Thank you. Honestly, I just feel blessed that this doing this show kind of fell in my lap. I should tell you that story sometime. Fell in my lap.
Well,
and I am just blessed for that. So you're working on this organization we mentioned, Canada for Emilio, did you get the video I sent you? You did, okay. We're not ready yet, but making sure you got it. Okay, so we're going to talk about Texans for Responsible Judges, but you're particularly focusing, I believe, at this time on the elections of the judges in the Texas Criminal Court of Appeals.
That's
so,
right.
So tell us about, first of all, they are the final stopping place
for
Texans. If you want to appeal a case, a criminal case, that's the last court you get to.
We have a bifurcated judicial system in Texas where the criminal versus the civil court are separated. People hear the Supreme Court, you know, that's the civil court. But the criminal court of appeals, essentially the way that I describe it is, it's the Supreme Court for criminal matters.
Yes, yep. Okay, so we have that court, and there was a decision which, I don't know, there are probably many, many
right.
reasons to look at who we're electing as judges. We've been through a few of them today. But the Court of Criminal Appeals has come under certainly, I've criticized them on my show.
High degree of scrutiny.
Yes, high degree of scrutiny. There you go. And I don't know if you want to tell the story. If you want to tell
the
story,
I could,
please
I would.
Do.
But before I start with that, I'd like to just kind of challenge you a little bit. and give you a little background. You know, if we were to go out today and try to summon up a crowd on the street, and we were to say, can you name how many people are on the Criminal Court of Appeals? How many judges? Most people couldn't tell you. They're not. And then if you were to even go so far to say, can you name anyone on the Criminal Court of Appeals? Most people, I would say vastly, probably only 1 in 100 might possibly get 1 or 2 names, if that. And so most of the time, people just don't even pay attention to these races. However, as we stand right now today, I personally believe that there's never been a political race that holds more significance, I believe, in the history of Texas as the current Criminal Court of Appeals.
Couldn't agree more. And there are probably many reasons for that, but
let me kind of center it up a little bit. So basically, about 24 months ago, the Criminal Court of Appeals, which has historically been somewhat of a very conservative court historically, they took up a case called the Stevens case, and it's a ruling that back in 1951 instructed the Attorney General to prosecute and to investigate voter or election crime. They took up this case and determined a ruling that basically prohibits the Attorney General from being able to prosecute voter fraud or election fraud ever again, thus leaving all the responsibility in the hands of the local district attorney. Now, the ruling that they came up with is probably the most inexplainable court ruling. And the methodology of saying that, you know, the AG can't prosecute, it just seems so lunacy that it just doesn't make sense. There is no other state, there's no other situation in our nation that comes close to something like this.
Yeah. And, you know, on that, I actually went home in between meeting. I printed it out right here. I'm not going to read it out loud, but it's a very lengthy decision. But I've heard since the time this ruling came out, many people questioning the Criminal Court of Appeals in Texas. Why would you say that the Attorney General in Texas cannot take case of first instance, meaning he doesn't have to, he shouldn't have to wait until a district attorney in some county throughout Texas says, I have a problem here, and asks for the Attorney General's help? The issue is whether or not the AG can initiate cases if the local DA does not. And to make that clear, I want to hit one quick point about all this, and that is that I said several times on this show, and I want to get to it, and just, we're going to play a clip in a moment, but part of what is occurring is that throughout, I talked about forces we don't see. I've talked about George Soros a lot on this show. So George Soros, remember the happy listeners, you've seen it, I've done it before, I can bring it out again, but there's George Soros' organization, just think it's a little ball, okay? And then there are surrounding him, you know, there's whatever it is, 30 or so organizations that are, they're kind of getting his money. And then beneath them, there's another whole layer. So organizations come up with really happy sounding names like People for the American Way or We Love the Flag or something stupid. And what they are radical leftists funded by George Soros, whose primary goal is to take America down.
Do you want to jump in and share something? Point. So I got to tell you right now, I've heard Attorney General Ken Paxton speak on this issue many, many times. And the way that he always states it, he goes, it was one of the most ingenious strategies that he's ever seen that he deployed. George Soros has a plan to obviously flip the United States to liberal blue. And in that process, he's been doing that and executing that strategy in states like California, Colorado, all across the country where you've seen it. But his strategy in Texas was absolutely ingenious. Step number one was to go out and get in these local markets, very radical district attorneys elected. In some cases, they were other Democrats that were in district attorneys in those markets that were very productive, and they were working with Ken Paxton, and you know, they're working well and doing a good job. But he came in and pushed and funded the most radical DAs possible, people that he knows will not pursue aggressively a justice trying to pursue crime. And in this case, what happened is he got these district attorneys elected in, you can imagine, Harris County, Travis County. These radical leftists, that was step number one, check, he got it accomplished. The second step in this three-part plan was then to get this Stevens ruling where the Criminal Court of Appeals, to flip the Criminal Court of Appeals so that they would support this overturning of the Stevens ruling, which then would block the AG from pursuing or investigating election fraud, making therefore the only source of justice for election fraud to be these local district attorneys. Now, we all know the third step or the third stage of his plan. It was to take down Ken Paxton through impeachment, through discrediting him, doing whatever he could to put him in a position that he would be out of office. It's pretty much like what you said in the earlier segment. You said there's never been an attorney general that's been more effective and how recognized he is. I got to tell you, I was having breakfast a few months ago with former President Donald Trump, and Attorney General Paxton happened to be in another room, and the former president said, "You know who that is, don't you?" I said, "Yes, sir." He goes, "Well, it's the most effective AG in America." And he went on to say, "You know, in this world of politics, the more effective you are as a conservative, the bigger the target is on your back." And he goes, "And that guy's got a target." So that was the third plan, was to try to basically get him out of office, get him impeached. Luckily, that hasn't happened. But he got two of his three objectives accomplished. And now we have an opportunity, which is our PAC's purpose, is to basically hold accountable those judges that quite candidly betrayed their conservative values and betrayed the rule of law. They're creating some new law that is not a part of our Constitution and saying, "Hey, let's block the Attorney General from prosecuting voter fraud." We've got to go in now and hold these people accountable, get them out of office, get people elected that are true conservatives, that are not going to rewrite the Constitution of Texas and are going to abide by a true common sense.
Absolutely true. I love all that. I love that President Trump recognizes that, and that three-step thing.
Absolutely.
That three-step thing you described gets him Democrat attorneys general. I've had many people, I know the question always is, well, you know, shouldn't there be some Republican, some Democrat attorneys general? The answer is yes. If they follow the rule of law, I don't care. But
absolutely,
the point of many Democrats who get, the ones funded by George Soros, one pushed by him, it is to create chaos. It is to fail to prosecute crimes, so then division happens in society. Chaos ensues. The leftist element feels enraged relentlessly, and the citizens. So he's created chaos. This is intentional. And then on your point about the Criminal Court of Appeals taking away Attorney General Paxton's ability to prosecute election fraud.
Right.
Part of what this whole, when I talk about election fraud, and I've talked about it so much on this show, but the notion, if you can convince people, well, you know, look what happened. I mean, I guess Biden just won in 2020. I guess you really were 81 million Americans.
Crazy.
And our American mindset doesn't want to believe we could have that level of corruption. They don't want to believe this kind of force above what we can see happening is really influencing things. But Soros is, in a whole myriad of ways. And one is to get Democrat attorneys general, and then a lot of people, even alleged conservatives, they kind of want a virtue signal and say, well, you know, they want to say, well, maybe it's the right, we should go soft on crime. Maybe we do have to change this, or maybe we should get rid of bail, even for violent criminals. I mean, they can't afford bail. And so they get people sucked in because they don't see the big picture. They don't see what's happening.
I don't know how old the interview was, but it was an interview with George Soros probably 10 or 15 years ago, maybe even longer. And they asked him, "Are you Republican? Are you Democrat?" He said, I wish I could pronounce it properly, but he said, like, "I'm a Sorosian," and I'm sure I butchered the pronunciation. But in essence, he was saying, "I am for creating chaos so that I can benefit on the way down and on the way up." And he goes, "The more chaos I can create, the more money there is to be made." And when you have that type of mentality, what are you going to do? You're going to get lawlessness. You're going to turn people against one another to where they just can't stand to be in the same room, so to speak, and no one can come to an agreement. But this now, and I want to make sure we make this point before this segment's over. You know, the beautiful part of where we sit in Texas is we've seen the end of this movie already. We know where this ends, Debbie. This is not like we can sit in our homes and say, "I wonder what happens if these district attorneys continue to ignore election fraud. I wonder what's going to happen if chaos continues and we continue to let lawlessness catch on." All we have to do is look at California. look at the cities in California. I guarantee you 10, 15 years ago, when I used to go to California all the time, I would never have believed that those cities would look like they are today. But we know how the story ends, and we, as the citizenry of Texas, we've got to fight, and we've got to get up and let our voices be heard and hold these, specifically these supposedly conservative Republicans that have no backbone. They align themselves with the power that be to get donations or to get chairmanships in the legislature. It's appalling to watch what these people do. You know, they proclaim to be great conservatives, but yet they turn on our attorney general and they try to impeach him, knowing no evidence, knowing it's not right.
No lawful right to do that.
No lawful. You know, they block him from speaking. They put a gag order on him. They don't let him defend himself properly. You know, they restrict people from being under oath so they can lie without recourse.
Right.
It just doesn't make sense.
Except if you have an agenda. Yes. Okay. So
good point.
Say for our listeners. So earlier we're talking about voting, and in this election in Texas coming up, we have a primary election. It's right around the corner. It's March 5th. When you go down, look at your ballot, there are many people you're going to recognize, and, you know, just take a minute. In fact, anyone can find your ballot online before you get to the voting booth.
Yes.
And then think, oh, wait, who do I want to vote for here?
Oh,
look it up at home, because you can bring it with you. You're allowed to bring paper with you. You can bring your list of who you want. You can bring voter guides with you. You just can't sit there and whisper to the guy next to you. You have to keep it to yourself. But you can. So look up, because on the Criminal Court of Appeals, the three candidates I would urge you to vote for, I want to hear you talk about any of them. David Schenck, I happen to know.
Solid.
Yeah, he's so solid. I saw him a couple of candidate things, and he's just so fun to see. So his last name is S-H-E-N-C-K. S-H-E-N-C-K. I should have gotten other websites. But David Schenck is one who is he's actually follows the law of all things. He actually does.
Oh, he is. He's tough.
Yeah, place one. Gina Parker, another one I've known a long time, just saw her recently. She's running at place seven. This is Texas Criminal Court of Appeals. Write these down or look them up and print them out and have them with you when you go to vote for early voting. The third is Lee Finley. This one I do not happen to know, but Lee Finley is a third running for place eight. Those three are running as people who will actually follow the law and not just make up law, as seems to have happened in this most recent case, where you can't initiate the attorney general cannot initiate voter fraud prosecution without a local DA. And on that point, just in case people miss tying this point together, when you're George Soros and you're getting leftist DAs into office, and you know they won't prosecute election fraud because they like election fraud.
They love it.
That's what they live to do. So they won't. So he gets the DAs in place. They won't prosecute election fraud. And then he cripples with this judgment by this decision by the Court of Criminal Appeals. The attorney general can't prosecute it. You got nowhere to go.
You got nowhere to go. There's no one to hold anyone accountable. You know, it just breaks my heart to think about it. Now, a lot of people think that this is all just about voter integrity or election integrity, but this stretches beyond that. This ruling of blocking the AG from being able to prosecute this, it applies in other areas, because their whole argument, which is so fouled, literally says the AG basically can't pursue any type of criminal case like this. And I don't want to go into the details. I'm not an attorney. I'm not qualified to discuss it. But I think the concept that anybody that's questioning this whole conversation is, ask yourself, do we really think that this has happened, this basically restricting the AG is the right thing to do, when we don't do that in the United States as a federal government? No other state does that. It's never been done before. And now all of a sudden, out of the blue, they come up with this ruling. It makes no sense other than, I don't want to say corruption, but other than some type of heinous agenda.
Yeah, I was getting on that point about you can't prosecute election. This ruling said, and I'm sure you're right, that extends beyond that. But
oh, it does.
You can't prosecute election fraud. So people who, it seems to me, are already manipulating elections, already benefiting from manipulating elections, and now looking at Texas, the protector of America, the state that cannot go blue or else we lose America, you can take out DAs, put in leftist DAs who won't prosecute, take out the attorney general. You're free to have rampant election fraud. Nobody comes after you. We have a quick clip to play, I believe. Do we have Mr. Emilio? Yep. Okay. Let's rock and roll with this.
recently, the Texas Criminal Court of Appeals tried stripping your power to enforce election fraud laws. I mean, you're the Attorney General of the state of Texas. You've actually been a champion fighting for the obvious fraud that's going on, you know, all over the place. You know, what's the latest with that? Because it feels like if you tried doing something similar in a blue state where they were making it difficult for a Republican, it would be an actual problem. But in Texas, it's, we'll just take the head attorney for the state and just pretend like he has no power in any of these things. What's going on there?
Well, so that's an important question. And it doesn't just affect Texas. It actually affects the whole nation, because if they're successful, I won't be able to prosecute voter fraud. And that means voter fraud won't be prosecuted. So, 2 years ago, I had over 900 cases of voter fraud going. We also stopped the mail-in ballot fraud going on in our state. It was going on in 12 different liberal counties. We were able to stop it, unlike Georgia and Arizona and other places where the attorney generals didn't step up and stop it. We were in 12 lawsuits in very liberal counties, losing to the court in the Court of Appeals until we got ways around to the highest courts. We were able to stop it. And so that's what saved Texas from being Georgia. We would have been Georgia. So now the Court of Criminal Appeals is a 9-member body. They are like our Supreme Court on criminal matters. So we have a bifurcated system in Texas, kind of unusual. And they make the final call on criminal matters. So they decided 2.5 years ago that they're going to strike down this statute from 1951 that directed from the legislature the attorney general to prosecute voter fraud. So that's what I was doing. I was prosecuting a lot of voter fraud, and we were getting convictions. Why did they do that? They waited till 2 days after the filing deadline to run against the three members that were up. There are 9 members. It was an 8-1 vote. The 3 members that were up went unopposed because we didn't know they were going to do that. So for 2 years, I've been able to prosecute voter fraud. And right now, we have to defeat them. And I'm convinced they were put there by Soros because no one knows who they are. No one knows who's on the Court of Criminal Appeals. No one pays attention. So we've got 3 members. We've got 3 people running against them. And I'm going to say their names because I want people to know about Gina Parker, David Shank, and Lee Finley. And those elections in March are the most important elections that I know of in Texas, right along with defeating the Speaker in the House, because he is also blocking legislation to reauthorize me to prosecute voter fraud. And if we don't fix those, we will lose Texas and the game is over.
Yeah, and it's one of those, like, now, 3.5 years later, oh yeah, the Hunter Biden laptop's real. You're seeing the stuff out of Georgia and you're seeing the stuff out of Arizona. It's like, now it's too late. We can't, like, they're actually showing that a lot of the things people were talking about were happening actually happened. There was a lot of fraud. There was a lot of gamesmanship, but they're so used to, they take the win. They say it's misinformation, it's Russian disinformation, whatever it may be. And then when they get caught a couple of years later, well, now it's too late to do anything about it. So we're just going to have to deal with it. And,
I'm going to jump in and cut that off there. You know what? Just because I don't want to run out of time. It's a great clip. I'm going to cut it a tiny bit short. So, we're talking about all this great conversation about what we're going to do and with election fraud. And you brought up something while it was playing. How many cases were pending that the attorney general had gone after election fraud?
So let's just think of it like this. If you want evidence that what we are saying is true, prior to this Stevens ruling being overturned by the Criminal Court of Appeals, there were roughly 930 cases of election fraud that were being investigated, roughly 930. Now today, there are 5.
So it was a very effective operation.
Oh my gosh. As I've heard the AG say many times, this was a brilliant move on Soros's part. But, flipping our conservative judges, that's why, Debbie, it's so critical. Again, TexansForResponsibleJudges.com, we have to find a way to get this message out, to get these 3, what I would call rhino judges, off the court and get true conservatives on the court to protect our state and protect our nation.
Yep. And so TexansForResponsibleJudges.com.
Yes.
And people can make donations there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. As I was telling with our earlier guest, when Vince Gallo was here as well, these things cost money.
Yes.
And this particular one, you've got to target the people who are active voters, because it isn't just a mailing campaign. It's targeting active voters who will take the time to read it and go down the ballot. So the cost in part is just communication, right? The cost
Absolutely.
Of this effort. Between now and March 5th.
That's it. It's all about getting the message out, letting people hear this, because the unique part of this is when they hear that Texas is the key part of this strategy to turn America liberal blue, everybody agrees. And we say, this is the race that will determine whether or not we can remain conservative or if we turn blue. That's it.
It is. So we need to be thinking about, check out their website, Texans. In fact, the candidates, I'm going to mention their names again, but if you go to texansforresponsiblejudges.com, they list along with the names and the background of these people, the three judges who are running against incumbents, the ones that we believe will follow the law more, follow the law, period. Lee Finley, place 8, Gina Parker, place 7, David Schenck, S-H-E-N-C-K. I realized I was misspelling his name for about 10 years in my phone. He sent me, so I'm like, oh, I misspelled your name. S-H-E-N-C-K, David Schenck, place 1. So those are the three, that, and this is just a
Criminal Court of Appeals.
Yeah, all for Criminal Court of Appeals. They'll be on your ballot. You'll go through a bunch of allegedly higher offices, members of Congress and such, but keep going down the ballot. Check these out. Check out that website. Figure out what these names are. Print them out, because it gets hard, and you get in the booth and you're thinking, wait, who is the other person?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So consider doing that, because it really is going to make the difference whether or not we can have a court that will respond to violations of law with honesty, who will rule in the case, and all sorts of criminal appeal cases, will they follow the law or follow what seems to be, I can't say what drove all of the judges who made this opinion, but it does seem they were facilitating, whether they knew it or not, they were facilitating the Soros agenda in Texas.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. So
absolutely.
One final shot on Texans for Texas. You're right. He's got to think of a better name.
Texans for Responsible Judges. And yes, I will work on that in the future to get a better, easier name. I promise.
Okay. Well, I know you're very, very busy. Thank you for taking
God
time to join
you,
me
Debbie.
Today.
Thank you so much
Thank
for
you
your
so
help.
Much.
God bless you.
Thank you. Okay, folks, even though I said I didn't have time for these, I'm going to tell you in approximately 30 seconds of two other issues I want to hit very, very briefly. One is that our president, he who occupies the White House, actually had now a special prosecutor, her. This guy decided on the case with Biden had documents in his home that were he's not supposed to have. His ruling was essentially that they could not prosecute him. This was in his opinion, not, you know, a rumored in the back room. In his opinion, they can't prosecute Biden because he's basically too confused to understand what's happening. He can't deal with facts. In the interview related to his potential prosecution, he couldn't tell them what year he was vice president, what years he was vice president, couldn't recall his own vice presidency, couldn't recall when his son died. They gave other examples. And the very quick language was that he would be able to portray himself as to a jury as an elderly man with a poor memory. Okay. This is a guy who runs, allegedly, the free world. Now, he doesn't really run the country, even now. We know this, but still. And so no one in the entire realm of people with potential power to invoke the 25th Amendment, which calls for the removal of the president. There is a process. I was going to read it to you, but I'm out of time. The process is not simple. It's not like the cabinet can sit down and have a vote. There's a complex process that was put in our Constitution after the JFK assassination to have an orderly way to deal with someone who simply can't function. That's in there, but you don't have one person talking about that. I mean, conservatives are talking about that, but no one with power to do anything is doing anything about it. And honest to goodness, it's an embarrassment beyond words that this man, and I've seen senior family members go through dementia. It is sad. I am not mocking it. But when you're in that condition, you have no right, no way you should be in control of anything in this country, even dog catcher, certainly not president. Last quick point, Ukraine funding. So, hey, J.D. Vance, who's brilliant, J.D. Vance, Senator Vance, pointed out that this new Ukraine funding bill that just passed, are all cheering themselves, patting themselves on the back for the Ukraine funding bill. It actually has like a trip up if Trump wins in the fall and becomes president again, you have in the I'm sorry, I'm trying to quick get to my last thing I got to find for you. Anyway, can't do it fast enough. Anyway, it has a provision in the bill that says that even if Trump tries to reopen the question of how much we fund Ukraine, it could trigger impeachment. J.D. Vance is saying this. It was written in the way the Democrats are saying, we're going to keep on funding Ukraine till the cows come home, and you all cannot do one thing about it. And so that is apparently in this bill, and so he's called it, so now they'll probably have to change that bill. But I'm telling you all this to say, I think it's really, okay, now I found what I want to tell you. All right, So to close our show today, we're almost out of time. I close the show every, I'm going to tell you very quickly who our upcoming Thursday guests are, because they're great Thursday shows, in-studio audience, full-hour interviews. Rick Green, Patriot Academy, great guy this Thursday. Liz Collin, Minneapolis author of a book about George Floyd called They're Lying, and she also was the commentator on the, or the moderator on the movie Fall of Minneapolis. Then March 7th, Professor David Clements, new film out, Let My People Go, talking about election fraud. And the last one, Dr. Haim is coming in. Dr. Eitan Haim, H-A-I-M, on March 14th. Okay, here's his story in a nutshell. He is a doctor who was working at a children's hospital here in Texas who had promised Attorney General Paxton they were not engaging in mutilation. They were not mutilating children anymore in the quest of transgenderism. And then Texas state law passed, the legislature passed a law saying you can't do that. They swore they weren't doing it. This guy, whistleblower, said actually they are. They're still doing exactly what they were doing before. They're engaging in surgeries and treatments for very young children transgendering after state law prohibits that. So he's a whistleblower, comes out and tells his story. And then the FBI was at his front door next day. Understand, actually happened here in the great state of Texas. So great Thursday shows lined up. Please tune in. I know I went long today, but I still want to close the show, as I always do, by telling you why the stories we talked about today matter to you. So we started our show talking about injustice in America, J6, Trump, and the Stein verdicts. E. Jean Carroll defamation verdict versus Trump relates to decades-old alleged event. She couldn't remember specific season, month, day, time, had no witnesses. Correlated to a storyline in Law and Order she had watched, and the New York legislature changed the statute of limitations, and a Trump-hating Silicon Valley billionaire financed. That's your justice system, friends. J6 defendants Jalise and Mark Middleton, who did nothing wrong, guilty on all charges today. Michael Mann, defamation, punitive damage verdict versus Stein. Jury finding no evidence of actual damage suffered by Michael Mann. Even his legal fees were paid by others. Mann's counsel closing argument appealing for punishment of those who question climate science. And the jury gave him $1 million. These are the actions of juries conditioned and mesmerized to believe justice requires hatred and punishment of Trump, no matter what the facts are, and obedience to climate alarmism, no matter what truth is or First Amendment freedom of speech means. All verdicts should be overturned on appeal if America under the rule of law is to survive. And on Knives Out on Biden, I didn't even talk about this. New York Times unleashed two editorials this week, basically saying he's too old, needs to go. Special counsel Hur in the Biden document case finds Biden could win with a jury because he wouldn't be convicted because he's an elderly man with a poor memory. The American people watch all of this with growing frustration and anger. Everyone knows Biden is not mentally fit, not carrying out the responsibilities of his office, endangering all, and that the 25th Amendment was enacted for precisely this scenario. But no elected Democrat or Republican, no cabinet adult will take appropriate action for the sake of the country. America desperately needs an infusion of new leadership grounded in the Constitution and in American norms of right and wrong. And finally, Ukraine funding bill kneecaps Trump's next term. Folks, we went beyond our time today. And you know what, I don't know if my producer's giving me a look here. Anyway, we're a little past our time, but I do want you to pay attention to that. We'll put it up at our website later, americacanwetalk.org. We'll put all these up later, because the basic point is this is how leftists think. They're miles ahead of us. You know, Trump's going to come back in, take a close look at Ukraine funding, do a whole lot to protect the American taxpayer, and the Democrats are kneecapping, essentially cutting it off even before Trump, which I think he will do, wins in the fall. So that's our show for today. My name is Debbie Georgiadis. The show is America Can We Talk. Please check us out online. However you're listening, check us out online at americacanwetalk.org. I do this show to speak truth about America because America matters. And I will talk to you next time.
America Can We Talk? Truth about America. Can you